7.
I'll be reading from Matthew 14. Now Herod had arrested John and bound him and put him in prison because of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. For John had been saying to him, "It is not lawful for you to have her." Herod wanted to kill John, but he was afraid of the people, because they considered John a prophet. On Herod's birthday, the daughter of Herodias danced for the guest and pleased Herod so much that he promised with an oath to give her whatever she asked. Prompted by her mother, she said, "Give me on a platter the head of John the Baptist." The king was distressed, but because of his oaths and his dinner guests, he ordered that the request be granted and had John beheaded in the prison. His head was brought in on a platter and given to the girl, who carried it to her mother.
Especially on this wintry kind of morning, isn't it? It just is. I thought yesterday was the most wintry day we've had all year. It's not the coldest, but it was just robbed my energy yesterday. But I will just tell you, March is my least favorite month of the year. And not because I click a calendar a year in March, which is all right, but it just, you know, it's the end of winter and the damp bothers me worse than just the old cold, and it's always damp in the first especially, and overcast, and you've had some pretty weather sometimes, and so I'm just glad you're here and awake, and it's good to be here, right? It's just good to be here. And so I'm just glad that you're here. Now, if you don't want to get here after we've left next week, know that you're going to lose an hour of sleep on Saturday night. It is spring forward. So Nathan, spring forward, or you'll completely miss the whole thing. I'm just telling you. So, we go to daylight saving time next Sunday morning, next Saturday night. So that's makes it longer in the evenings for us. Whether you like that or not, it changes. I tell you, I'm all for it. But that time will change next week, so it does impact us. On the other one, going the other way in the fall, it's wonderful. People get to Sunday school, they ain't been here in 351 weeks, you know. But next week, there'll be folks who'll circle the parking lot realizing that they have missed it. We're going to talk about Acts again today. Hootie read for us from Matthew as he reads about the beheading of John. And the reason I'm going to do that, I'm going to give you a little history, a little genealogy. Some of you like it, some of you don't. I won't dwell on it, but it's kind of good for you to know who all these people are and how all of this interconnects. Because what we're going to see in the book of Acts is kind of a continuation a little bit, a little differently, but again, the family tradition here. John the Baptist is put to death. He's put to death in spite of the fact that Herod Antipas. Let me get them right. Herod Antipas is the Herod. Now, he is the son of Herod the Great. All right? Herod the Great dies shortly after the birth of Jesus. Alright, dies shortly after the birth of Jesus. So this is his son, and John the Baptizer at this point is respected and revered by the people. And so politically, it's a little difficult for Antipas to put him to death. Okay? Because the people liked him. Because again, he's walking a tightrope. Alright? As king of Judea, he's walking a tightrope between the Romans and the Jews. And his major job is just to keep peace and to keep the taxes flowing. That's his job. All right? You just have to understand that. And so you've got a major cultural, religious clash going on in Judea. And so his job is to try to keep a lid on all of that. It's a pretty good job. All right, it's a pretty good job. And so he's got another issue. He's got a wife that's his brother's wife, which is kind of an issue. And John the Baptist won't let it go. All right? John the Baptist is telling him, you can't have your brother's wife. I don't know for sure, but if you kind of read the text, I think he was willing just to say, you crazy man, I'm not going to pay any attention to you. But his wife, Herodias, hated John for it. Okay? She hated John for it. She couldn't let it go that John kept saying she couldn't be the wife of Antipas. So, here we are. And so, to try to appease her, he has John the Baptist arrested. Okay? And he knows, again, he's walking this tightrope. But now he's between three hard places. The Romans, the Jews, and his wife. Now get this picture. Because you need to know this is what's going on. Because we don't always, you know, but you just imagine this. You know, all of this is going on. And so he arrests him. Well, he has a party. And my guess is alcohol was involved. And so Herodias' daughter dances for Herod and for his guest. Well, he's got a bunch of guests and they're probably important. And he's probably been imbibing. And so guess what he does? He's so tickled and his guests are so tickled, this young girl dancing for him, that he pops off and says, hey, with an oath, I'll give you whatever you request. And he says it loud and public so everybody hears it, right? So the girl doesn't have any idea what to ask for, so she goes to ask Mama what to ask for, right? Well, Mama knows what to ask for. Mama says, ask for the head of John the Baptist. She said, I'm going to put a stop to this mess. Now, Herod's got a problem. Because the Jews like John the Baptist. All right, we need to know, because this is going to change in Acts 12. All right, it's going to change. But they like John the Baptist. So he doesn't want to put John the Baptist to death because it could cause an upheaval. But guess what? He's got his wife to deal with. And now, in front of all these people, with an oath, he's told this girl what he's going to do. So how does he back out on that? It's like a triple dog dare. And so, John the Baptist is put to death. Okay? It's partly for the faith. But it's partly for the faithfulness that John the Baptist has of telling the truth about the situation with his brother's wife. All right, let's fast forward now to the book of Acts. And we're, you know, a few years later and we have a new Herod. We do not have Philip's or Antipas' son. We have his nephew, who is on the throne, who is Herod the Great's grandson, Herod Agrippa the First, all right, is on the throne. And it's tedious because his grandmother is Jewish and the rest of them aren't, but the Jews accept him. And he actually, as a young man, was thrown in prison by the Romans, but he gets all that smoothed out and he gets along with emperors Claudius and Caligula, and that's how he keeps his job, okay? So he's got this job over this area of the Middle East, trying to keep them under control. That's the situation where we find ourselves. Now, it's interesting, and we shared this on Sunday night studying great women of the Bible or great names. Do you remember Drusilla and Bernice? They're his daughters who wind up being involved later in the book of Acts. We're going to see them. They're powerful women. He's kin to Herodias. I mean, they're all knotted up. This family tree doesn't fork much, okay? Not unlike royalty of Europe in times past, right? Because it's all about power back and forth. So, all right, we got Herod the Agrippa the First on the throne, the grandson of Herod the Great, who had put the children to death, right? Killed family members because he was very paranoid. And now the nephew of the Herod who has John the Baptizer put to death. All right, now let's go to Acts. But you got that background. It was about this time that King Herod Agrippa the First, all right, Herod Agrippa the First, grandson, the nephew, arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. Now what's changed? What's changed? Because remember, the Jews liked John the Baptizer. But now the church, first called Christians in Antioch, those followers in Jesus, for a long time, they were really recognized as a sect of Judaism. And we can talk about that connection of the root, but just kind of stay with me. They were kind of a sect of Judaism because they're meeting in synagogues, right? And there's problems with it, and there's thoughts they'll pull back in. As far as the Romans are concerned, they're just Jews. They don't necessarily know the difference. And don't find that hard to believe. Let me ask you a question. And I just bring this up, and I don't know much about it. But do you know the difference between a Sunni and a Shiite Muslim? Most of us don't know. I mean, we recognize the names, but we don't know the differences because we're not that involved in that religion and that culture, right? So for the Romans, the Christians, the Jews, they're all pretty much lumped together. But what has happened? The Christians are becoming, they're more numerous. And what else has happened in the last chapter that we just talked about? What's happened? What's happened with Christianity? It's gone to the Gentiles. Is that what you said, Nathan? Yes. Hey, buddy, when you get here, you're loaded, aren't you? Huh?
Is that the right answer?
That is the right answer. When you get here, you are loaded, buddy. You are loaded. It's gone to the Gentiles. Which is interesting. If you look at the dynamic, they had some trouble with them when they thought they were heretics. But they had real trouble with them when they spread it to the Gentiles. And so people aren't any different than they are today, right? I mean, when it went to the Gentiles, remember, it's a struggle for the church. It's a real struggle for the church. But for the Jews outside the church, that they have carried any kind of faith to these Gentiles to whom we have a great prejudice, it's huge. And so that's causing more and more dissatisfaction among the Jews with the Christians. Not only do they believe they're heretics religiously, but now they've carried this to the Gentiles who are unclean by every measure that they know. And so now it has become popular to arrest the Christians. So we have King Herod, who was afraid of the Jews, not the same Herod, right? The nephew, who was afraid of the Jews with John the Baptist, but got himself in a bind. As my daddy would say, got his tail in a crack. Now it's become popular to persecute the Christians. That the Jewish people are supportive of arresting the Christians. So, it was about this time that King Herod, arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. Now, we're going to see James. This is not James who writes the book of James in the New Testament. Who is that James? We're going to see him in this chapter. He's the brother of Jesus, right? Who's not a believer early on, but becomes a leader in the church. Right? It's that James. But this is the James, the brother of John, the sons of Zebedee, the sons of thunder. We see them early on in the picking of the apostles, right? Now, this could just go on. I'm excited about this. Can y'all tell? Because it all connects together. They or their mother come to Jesus, and what do John and James ask for? Do you remember? Huh? To sit on his right and left hand when he comes into the kingdom, right? Remember that? And Jesus said, that's not mine to give, but if you're going to have those positions, what will you have to do? Huh? Do you remember? You'll have to drink the cup that I drink. Remember? You'll have to drink from the cup that I drink. And Jesus dies. And so we're going to see James here now is martyred for the faith. James is having to drink this cup of death. He said, we can drink that cup. Now what's going to happen to John? What happens to John? Not in this chapter. It's going to be later. John's going to live to be maybe the oldest living apostle or the longest living apostle. What happens to him? Huh? He's exiled where? To Fantasy Island. For all you Alabama fans. To the Isle of Patmos. And what happens there? He receives the revelation, right? He receives the revelation that's written, the last book of the Bible. This is the John here. His brother is the first apostle martyred. And John is the last living, the sons of Zebedee. All right, James is put to death by Herod Agrippa I for political reasons more than anything else, because I don't think Herod Agrippa I is all that concerned about religion, but politics and power he's concerned about. So he puts James to death, and guess what? It makes the people happy. And when you're in a position like this and it makes people happy, what are you going to get? More of the same, right? That's a fact we need to understand even today. I'm going to preach a little bit. You're going to get more of what you reward. That's a basic principle, right? You're going to get more of what you reward. So it's very important that we're careful what we reward as individuals, as in society, right? If you reward certain behavior, if you award certain activity, if you award certain attitudes, what happens? You're going to get more of it. You're going to get more of it. The Scripture always says that people have to what? Be responsible for what they do, right? Be responsible for what they do. And so we have to make sure that people are responsible, that not that they're actually able to benefit from inappropriate attitudes and behavior. Do we help people who are in need of help? Spiritually, physically, emotionally? Yes. But sometimes we try to remove the consequences of inappropriate actions and attitudes. Is that not right? And what happens when we do that? You get more of the same, right? Most of y'all, I'll just use this because it's a good one. I mean, you could be your stove at home. But most of you have been to Mommy Kay's house, Kathy's house. And not so much now, but, you know, used to that stove. It's been there for 30 years plus, close. 40 years. Will burn you. And most of us either physically had a scar or a blister, or have had some clothing article that was lost to the fire, and you learn to stay away from it, right? And it don't take somebody telling you. It doesn't take somebody reminding you. You walk around with a blister for a day or two, and guess what? You don't touch it again. And if that blister is where you've backed up to it, you doggone sure won't back up to it again. I'm just saying. Right? Because the consequence of doing that, but what happens if there's no consequence to backing up to that? Let's say my clothing keep me from hurting and somebody immediately goes and replaces the clothing with something nicer than I had. then I'm not all that worried about the stove, right? But if I've got a scar or a blister or some pain, the next time I get close to the stove, I'm going to move away a little further, right? Or I'm not going to touch it. Or if I'm not sure whether it's hot or not, because sometimes that happens. You don't realize that there's wood in it, and you reach out and you touch it. But then guess what you do? You're going to do that the next time, aren't you? Before you sit down. The reason I share that is, whatever consequence we get from behavior, we'll either get more or less of it. That's just a rule, and it's important we remember that. So, what happens with Herod Agrippa the First? He puts James to death, and the people that he is responsible for controlling like it. And not only does he like, I'm sure, the popularity, the main thing is it just makes his job easier. Makes his job easier. There was a train wreck this week. I was talking to Josh about it. Josh is a track inspector.
I was to that train wreck.
Yeah. Josh is now an unemployed train inspector. That wasn't on Josh's track, but Josh has shared with us many times that when that happens as a track inspector, you become nauseous. That's a fair term. Anxious about, was there something wrong on this track? It was not on his track, but he said it was a bearing went out. But he even shared the story that a train inspector, now retired, was eating a pizza one day, got a call that there was a train wreck, and said he threw his pizza up in the parking lot. Why? Because the apprehension that I'm responsible for that. If something goes wrong, it's on me. Well, the same thing's true for Herod. He's responsible for keeping that. So anything that makes that easier and better and safer, you're going to be attracted to it. Right, Josh? You know, he doesn't want something to go wrong. Because we're going to see, probably not today, because I'm watching the clock, we're going to see Peter's going to get out of prison. What happens to the guards? They get executed. They get executed. They were responsible. Herod is responsible. So you're going to get more of the same. So he puts James to death, and people like it. When he saw that this met with approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. This happened during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. After arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover, because it's just totally inappropriate to put him to death during the Passover, this big feast. This brings up another question. When was Jesus put to death? During the Passover, right? Which, do you know, is just totally against Jewish law. There's a lot of things that happened in Jesus' arrest and trial and execution that's very interesting from Jewish law and Jewish tradition. That, again, but when we get our minds on something, what are we going to do? We're going to do it if it hair lips the governor, right? And so that happened to Jesus. So he's waiting, and he wants to put Peter to death. So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. Church was earnestly praying to God for him. I'm going to stop right here. We're going to pick this up, the Lord wills, next week. And we're going to see what happens to Peter. And I want to leave us with, and I want you to think about, what's the church doing? Listen, we just read it. This is not a trick question. This is not a trick question at all. What were they doing? Praying for who? For Peter. And I want you to read ahead, if you want to, most of you know, because I think this is interesting. I want us to talk a little bit next week about the church's reaction when prayer is answered. The church's reaction when prayer is answered. I think it's an interesting thing. And it's not foreign to us either. Support. What's going on? The church is being persecuted. Partly because of their belief in Jesus, to a large part. Partly because it had gone to the Gentiles. It was breaking all of the barriers. Was breaking all of the norms of culture. Even though these people were doing God's will, and they were, right? These Christians are about what God had called them to do. It's the fulfillment of prophecy. It's the fulfillment of the law. It was not accepted. It was not accepted, either religiously or societally. They're being persecuted for their belief, even though they're doing the will of God. It's important for us to remember that doing the will of God does not always bring pleasant things. James is doing the will of God, and he's put to death. John the Baptizer is doing the will of God, and he's put to death for it. The reason I said that, had God forsaken them? No, that's going to be another lesson. If not next week, maybe the next week we're going to talk, because the outcome for James and Peter are different. Different outcomes for Peter and James. I want us to talk about that. Because that's probably one of the greatest struggles of our faith, right? That we pray for folks and prayers are answered in different ways. That's difficult. I find it difficult, don't you? Let's talk about that. Because we're going to see that in this chapter. But being about God's business, while God always blesses us and God always cares for us, the outcomes are often different. And being about God's business does not make everybody like us. In fact, it can be very right to the contrary, because here's what Jesus tells us. Jesus said, the world didn't accept me. And if you follow me, if you do what I did, it will not accept you. Right? The world will not accept you. I get an organ transplant. What's my body going to try to do? What am I going to fight the rest of my life? Rejecting it, right? My body's going to try to reject it because it's different. It's different. The same thing is true for us living godly in a sinful world. The world's always going to try to reject us because we are foreign. Right? It's just because we're foreign. Because we're different than the way of thinking, than the worldly way of thinking. The worldly way of thinking. John the Baptist died because why? He told the truth about what was going on in Herod's house, right? He told the truth. But he died for it. God wasn't angry at him. Wasn't that God had forsaken him? But John was willing to stand for the truth and willing to die for that, because that happens. But we always need to what? Remember to trust in God and follow Him, because what do we know? God always keeps promises, right? That God always blesses us, that God always cares for us. And even though we might face persecution and even death, which is foreign to us today in our culture, and I'm thankful for that, but persecution probably is growing for us. And may continue to, would be my guess. But that we always stand for truth, trusting in God, knowing what's right. Because we look at this and we say, you know, James died. And that would have been a traumatic thing for him and for his family, right? I mean, think about that. Get thrown in prison, know you're going to get your head chopped off. I say it that way because that's what happened. I would be stressed. You be stressed? Would you be stressed for your family? Would you be stressed if it happened to, you know, somebody in our community who was part of the family of faith, that their head was chopped off? It would shake us. That's what's going on in the first century. But those folks remain faithful. As we look at that, what probably do you think? It's what I think. Yes, he lost his head, but God took care of him and he got to go home and be with the Father, right? Does that cross your mind? That's what I thought. I said, here's an apostle of God. This is an apostle of God who received his reward. But it's easy for me to say that about somebody 2,000 years ago, right? It's right. That's the right response. And so I'm not saying that's a bad response. I'm saying that's a wonderful response. That's the right response. But as we strive to live Christian lives today, it should be our response. Right? It should be our response that, yes, it brings fear. Persecution brings fear. But I'm going to stand with Jesus and I'm going to stand for truth no matter what comes, because God is faithful and just to reward us when we follow Him. Right? He is. And just like I have trust that James is cared for, I have trust that when we follow Jesus and when we live by faith, that God's going to take care of us. Right? Here's what Paul says. And I close. Paul, in the midst of persecution, writes and says, I'm between a rock and a hard place. Now, we talked about Herod being between a rock and a hard place, right? Between the devil and the deep blue sea. But Paul is in a totally different place than Herod is. Paul says, here's my trouble. Here's what I'm struggling with. Here's what's difficult for me. He says, what I struggle with is I know that for me to die would be better. Because if I die, I know I'll be present with the Lord. But he says, I know if I stay, it would be better for you, for the church, because I can encourage you and I can help you. And he said, I just don't know what's best. I don't know whether to live or die is better. If I live, I'm going to live for Christ. And if I die, it'll be gain. Now to me, that is the epitome of faith. That's the mountaintop. When we can come to a point where to say, I don't know whether it's better to live or die. You know, if I live, I'm going to live for Christ. If I die, it's going to be gain. He wasn't suicidal. He wasn't distraught. He was, I'm going to be about faith. I'm going to serve God every day that I live. And if my life is taken from me, I'll be at home with God. And so you just can't beat me. You know, you just can't beat God's people. You can't beat a people. You can't beat us if we can spend our lives serving God and then you take our lives and everything even gets better. How do you discourage us? Now, let's be honest. In the midst of persecution, there is stress and pressure. I don't want to take away from that. There was for the first century Christians. They were under stress. There was pressure. There was fear. But I want us to pull back and look and say, let's live for Jesus every day. And no matter what happens, it's always going to be better for us. God's taking care of us and you can't beat Him. You can't beat God. You can't beat Him today and you can't beat Him in the future. You just can't beat Him. And that's a wonderful thing. Because when your Father can't be beaten, you can't be beaten. Because He loves us. He said, if you know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more does the Father know how to give good gifts to you? James died for faith. But we know that God cared for him. And the same thing is true for us. I pray that our persecution be limited. I pray that our persecution be limited. But most of all, I pray that our faith be such that we can accept whatever comes and be faithful. Jesus, the night before his death, was stressed. It's right. God in the flesh was stressed. I'm not speculating. He sweated drops of blood. He was under so much stress. But what did he say in the midst of that stress? Not my will, but your will be done. He said, if this cup can pass. He didn't want to go through the persecution if he didn't have to. All right? So it's fine to pray that that not happen. But if it does, if this is what it takes, then God, your will be done. That should be our prayer. Father, protect us, take care of us, bless us, keep us safe. But if we must bear discomfort and persecution, as long as it's about your will, let it be done and give us the strength and the faith and the courage to be about your business. Jesus was about God's will being done, even at great cost to himself. If you need to come, do that while we stand and sing.